Now, I want to talk about the William Casey news that came over the air, but before I do that, there is a very important appointment that's taking place in Washington right now, and it has been stewing and brewing for the past 6 months, coming to a head in October, and of course, we don't learn about these things until October rolls around, unfortunately. This has to do with the appointment of a gentleman. If it's not him, it'll be somebody else, by the name of Kenneth Burquist. And the articles I'm citing here are San Francisco Examiner, September 27th, and the Washington Post had a long article. And if you want a scary face, go look up Washington Post, September 18th, 1987. He looks like these surreal television movies of the robot man that is being produced. His name is Kenneth Burquist. The government, the Defense Department, is splintering off what Ronald Reagan always wanted and had to a certain degree, that Special Operations Department. Burquist would be in charge of $2.5 billion, and what they want are groups of special armies that will go, it's called Special Operations and Low Intensity Conflict Group, that will go into third world countries and knock them out, literally, get rid of people who oppose the exploitation of dictatorship. We will have what they call the Counterinsurgency Operations, Uniting Secret Special Operation Units. They were put together immediately after Grenada, where the SEALs and Rangers could go in and exclude practically the Joint Chiefs of Staff. This is the beginning of another escalation that Ollie North started in 1980 with Secord and Hakim and Mr. Meadows from Peregrine with the rescue mission over in Iran, the failed rescue mission. And the point is that these private armies would have their own funding. They would be out of the arm of Congress. And Congress is fighting this. You have to write to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is the group hearing this. And they are hesitant to put private armies in the hands of this particular group with so much money. And one of their goals is to be out of the reach of Congress. And last April, they stopped their hearings or discussed it and discussed what they were going to do. And now it's October, and they're going to vote soon on these special commandos. And those are the kind of SS Gestapo that Adolf Hitler had that ran the concentration camps, that were trained with blood and guts, that are fearless, that are accountable to nobody. This is a major decision of persons going off on their own, but part of the Defense Department where the Congress funds it, but the people don't have to know or vote, particularly people with a conscience. And as I say, if you are so inclined, get the Washington Post, September 18th, see Kenneth Burquist and see the man who'd be heading this. He's a Vietnam veteran. He was 5 years in Vietnam. He was at Stanford and then with the Special Forces and involved in these behind-the-scene counterinsurgency operations. And a quotation from the San Francisco Examiner, "I'm not anybody's yes man. I'm a longtime advocate of special operations, and you better believe it." He also is an ex-CIA employee, so he can pull on the Special Forces, the Defense Department, the CIA, and sort of be like an Ollie North managing from all the different areas and branches have access to them. Now, getting to Casey's private war, not only William Casey, but the CIA and the Bob Woodward, parts that were in the newspaper this week, I sat down yesterday to read the resumes and the first section that is serialized in the San Jose Mercury and the San Francisco Examiner. And I got about to the fifth paragraph, and I got so consumed in what I was seeing or reading that I decided to just work on that section and share it with you. And many of you will understand the reason why I was so interested. It has to do also with a letter that ties in very closely, a letter of a listener who wrote to Tony Coelho. He's a congressman from the 15th District of California, asking for a picture of Fritz Kramer from the National Security Council, and the letter written back was September 15th, and Mr. Coelho wrote, "Representative Coelho, thank you for contacting me regarding a photograph of Mr. Fritz Kramer, who you thought was on the staff of the National Security Council. I contacted officials at the National Security Council, and they informed me that although Mr. Kramer served as a consultant to the National Security Council in 1981, he was never on the staff of the organization. Since he was not a government employee, his photo is therefore not available for any government agency. Now, that gets interesting when Evans and Novak said he was on the NSC through the greater part of the Reagan administration, but he was an advisor, not on the NSC, and not a government employee. And again, Richard Secord left the Air Force in 83, was no longer a government employee, and began to work, in quotes, with no salary for the Air Force, setting up these terrorist teams and the Swiss bank accounts with Akeem and the rest. And a lot of that is history. You know a great part of that. Now, Reagan was inaugurated January 21st, 1981. So Fritz Gustav Anton Kramer, the one I talk about, who I think is one man with two different identities, was on and advising the National Security Council when Reagan took oath of office. And the new book coming out about the CIA, Bob Woodward said that William Casey wanted the job as the Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense, but Alexander Haig got it. The excuse being, and Woodward knows better, that Nancy thought Haig was better looking and more upright, and Casey had floppy ears. Well, that's BS. The reasons, Haig, a Knight of Malta, was deep throat for Woodward, allegedly during the Watergate time, and Haig is a direct protege of Mr. Fritz Kramer, gives him credit in his book. So Kramer was setting up this transition new presidency in 81 in the NSC, and Haig was Secretary of State. William Casey, a Knight of Malta with Haig, was active in the OSS, and then we'll go into his role as it begins in the unraveling of this story. He became the director of the CIA, and Henry Kissinger, who was a protege of Fritz Kramer, was handed in 1983 Central American policy, with Ollie North walking around under the tutelage of Henry Kissinger, and Helene von Dahn, the secretary of Reagan, making appointments through this time period, who made appointments for 8 years in California, came from being a translator of international imaging that became Stanford Technology, whereby that team is hired by the White House to do all the work that Casey and those people are going to do, with Secord, Hakeem, Shackley, Kleins, and Turpin and Wilson were part of that group, and they were Stanford Technology Trading Group was the group in Switzerland with Mr. Willard Zucker, and the Swiss bank accounts were used between Iran and the Contras, with still almost $8 million sitting in the account of Merrill Lynch in London. The chairman of Merrill Lynch, of course, was Don Reagan, chief of staff. So the purpose of reading this letter now is to get a framework of where 1981 was with Casey, and Mr. Woodward is writing about Casey and the CIA through these various time periods, having been with Casey 48 times, the first 4 years of the Reagan administration. Now, in the book, Veils, as the account begins, it starts with Casey wanting to have the job as Secretary of State of Defense. It goes to Haig, and then I indicate here that the Congress, member of Congress, has said that Kramer was the advisor of the NSC at this time. Now, William Casey, according to Bob Woodward, and these are his sentences that are particularly interesting because they give me a new light on pieces of the Fritz Kramer puzzle that are not in by a long shot, but make things much more clear. Just by way of explanation for new listeners, because I don't update it every week or all the time, people that are not familiar with the Kramer versus Kramer story, a gentleman came to the United States in 1939, the year that Hitler invaded Poland. He was a German with a monocle, came from Frankfurt, Germany, and went to school in Frankfurt, Germany, then was in Mussolini's Italy. He left his wife and new baby in Nazi Germany in 1939 and came to the United States. His brother William wasn't so lucky. He was apprehended in jail or prison or whatever it is in England as a suspect, as a Nazi spy. And this Kramer came to the United States and then came into military intelligence, not American citizen, and wearing his monocle, was active with the American military intelligence. And in 1943, he went to New Orleans and picked up another German, Henry Kissinger, and Kissinger credits him with being his mentor. And that Kramer went to the Battle of the Bulge and into Europe until the end of the war, where they were in charge with other people, the very top Nazis, after the war. And according to the American military reports, and I've sent for documents in Washington for quite a few of them, and in Maryland and Carlisle, Pennsylvania, in 1948, he moved into the Pentagon for 28 years, was the plans officer of the Pentagon, and was over General Westmoreland during the war, and was advisor to all of the particular persons in the Nixon administration with the Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam War, the Korean War, and the mentor of Kissinger using the National Security Council for wars that Congress didn't approve, knew about but didn't approve. And then he, in quotes, retired from the Pentagon to be advisor to the National Security Council, and he shares offices with Daniel Graham in Washington. Daniel Graham was former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency that has a budget 10 times larger than the CIA, and Daniel Graham is the head of High Frontier, Star Wars, and it was a Nazi rocket scientist that said when they were brought to this country with Project Paperclip, and that's why they were brought here, if you control the space, you control the world, and many scientists know that Star Wars is a first strike. So that's the Kramer that I talk about in regard to Alexander Haig. He was the mentor of Haig and Henry Kissinger, and you can look up his name in the index of books that these people have written or have been written about them. Now, Hitler had a favorite, Fritz Kramer, and this is where William Casey's role comes in, reading this new material. Adolf Hitler had a very favorite Fritz Kramer. He was telephonically in touch with him up until at least January of 1944, and he organized Adolf Hitler and the top Nazis and the elite of the Waffen-SS, the Gestapo, that they would be in a certain area of the Ardennes Offensive, which is known as the Battle of the Bulge, and that they would be there and merge with the Americans at that point, at which point America would take them as prisoners of war. And then, as it turns out, William Casey was turning them into persons inside of Germany in the OSS and recycling them. But Adolf Hitler had this top, Fritz Kramer, who was giving the orders for the 6th Panzer Division that met the American Army. And the American Fritz Kramer was in the 84th Infantry Division in the same towns and places, which I went over again last night reading the Casey material, and realized that they were both in the same time and place, but obviously one wasn't. And Hitler's Kramer could at that point be picked up at the Battle of the Bulge after traveling around and working and organizing and having come to this country working with the likes of Kissinger, the OSS, because according to Woodward's book, he was given permission to recruit. He even recruited Nazis for his work in the Gestapo and had them in Berlin, over 282 minimum people working so that they could get into action as soon as the war was over and not lose a minute using these valuable people. Now, the little son, Sven Kramer, that Fritz, the American, and I believe this is the same man, and I've been working on it for years, Kramer, this is Kissinger and Haig's mentor, plans officer of the Pentagon. He left his little boy, Sven, S-V-E-N, in Nazi Germany during the war, brought the wife and Sven back to this country, and Sven went through the usual grammar school, prep school, went to Harvard, became a liaison in the National Security Council to Ronald Reagan, and Newsweek, September the 7th, 1987, says that Sven Kramer is now assisting with the re-election campaign, not re-election, the campaign of Representative Jack Kemp to become president. Newsweek says Representative Jack Kemp is preparing a huge mailing. This will go to all the Pentagon people, of course, and the Defense Intelligence Agency mailing list that Ollie North used. And they're about to land a prize catch for the Kemp campaign from the National Security Council. They will have arms control expert Sven Kramer helping them. And also, several weeks ago, San Francisco Chronicle had an article about Jack Kemp's campaign, in case you're wondering, if you don't know much about Kemp. It said, Kemp organizer in New Hampshire, State Senator John Chandler, was dismissed September the 4th, 1987, because during his campaign working for Jack Kemp, he was telling people he almost threw up when he saw Jesse Jackson publicly kiss a white girl in New Hampshire in 1984. He complained that race mixing is threatening the white race. Well, this is the son of Fritz Kramer running the campaign. This is the kind of stuff they're talking. So we're not very far from the Fourth Reich, if you know what they talked about. Third Reich, if you knew what they talked about in the Third Reich, that after coming to America, getting the education, and now campaigning for the man, this is the kind of stuff that's coming out of their mouths. Now, this is what Bob Woodward wrote in just almost the beginning of the book, because I can't imagine what the next 300 or 400 pages have. It says, William Donovan, who was literally, he said, the godfather of William Casey, he was twice his age, and he was his mentor or godfather, both of them knighted by the Vatican as soon as the war was over, along with Reinhard Gehlen and James Angleton. William Donovan bestowed great responsibility on William Casey during the last 6 months of the war. And listen to this carefully, and you'll read it in the book. And then my mind began to churn about where our Fritz Kramer and Hitler's Fritz Kramer merged into what. Okay, Casey had written a memo saying, the OSS must be ready to step up the placing of agents within Germany. Donovan said he wanted an instant spy network behind German lines, and he met William Casey in 1943 in Washington, D.C. 1943, by March, was the time when the book The Nazis Went Underground detailed their plans for the next Anschluss, being as they couldn't take the Soviet Union this time around. 1943 is when Donovan hired Casey for this job. 1943 is when Alan Dulles set up offices in Bern, Switzerland, in order to hire former Nazis, SS Karl Wolf. They were current Nazis then, running Treblinka and the camps, and arranging for Reinhard Gehlen to come to this country, and the aerospace scientist, the Project Paperclip scientist. That was the role of Alan Dulles in Bern, Switzerland, working with the Gestapo at that time. And in 1943, besides the Nazis going under and all of these operations, is when Fritz Kramer, in uniform, went to Louisiana and picked up Henry Kissinger, and all of a sudden they're going to be in the same town, on the same river, on the same day, right there in a town in the Ardennes Forest. And I went back to my sources again, seeing what is happening now, according to these reports of Casey. So Donovan has told Casey to get this together, and he relies on Casey, who was only 30 years old, very young, and he's written down some of it, the chief of secret intelligence for European theater. As best Casey could remember, Donovan's command was no more than get some guys in Germany. What was lacking in detail was made up in authority by Casey. By then, 31 years old, he was a full lieutenant. And of course, the Kramer that I talk about that became the plans officer for our entire Pentagon from Germany ended the war as a lieutenant and nothing more, and never went to a war college. And Casey was a lieutenant, just as was Fritz Kramer at that time period. But Casey commanded colonels, and he dealt with British and U.S. generals, more or less equals with him. His orders were get out of uniform, and he sent them to Selfridges on Oxford Street in London, where they would put on gray suits and all look alike. There was no rank. They had a job to do. Casey threw himself into every detail of spy running. He selected credible spies, and that was difficult, getting them into Berlin in the time period of February to May, April of May of 45, as the craziness is running down, scaling down, and the Germans are fleeing into the arms of the Americans by prearranged plans going back a year and a half. Woodward says it wasn't easy to get credible spies, and you bet it wasn't. Americans just wouldn't cut it at Gestapo headquarters, and you can believe that. And that Gestapo headquarters are the ones in Berlin where he wanted his agents. About 40 anti-Nazi prisoners of war, and I'll define anti-Nazi for you when I'm through with the Woodward story, were chosen. A violation of the Geneva Convention prohibition against the use of prisoners of war for espionage. Casey didn't blink at all. If they were anti-Nazi and Gestapo, he'd have them back in Berlin after the Americans took them. In February of 1945, there were two OSS people in Berlin in February. But in January of 45 is when the top Waffen-SS were rounded up by those people that merged in these towns. And by February, there were only two in Berlin. But miracles happened. Casey had 30 teams in Berlin by the next month, which is March. A team is 4 to 10, but give him a minimum of 4, it would be 120. But 1 month later, William Casey had 58 teams of Gestapo, Waffen-SS, his teams inside of Germany. Former prisoners, well, they were prisoners of war. They're not former. They were just grabbed. And who was he to grab? The very people I've been talking about on the air for a long time, like Sepp Dietrich and Fritz Kramer and Joachim Peiper and von Rundstedt and Model, who commit suicide shortly after he was rounded up. And Casey had a team even for prostitution, codenamed Chauffeur, to get the various prominent people, I guess, so you could control them politically for years to come. So after reading that account of how these people were rounded up at that particular moment, I got out two sources that I've had on the air at various times and began to reread them to see what I was relating to this account of Casey's operation with the Gestapo and prisoners of war. And one account I went to were letters I got from Washington, D.C., from the Defense Investigative Service regarding Fritz Gustav Anton Kramer. And then I went to the historical book written regarding the Battle of the Ardennes Offensive, put together by Mr. U.M. Cole, which Waffen-SS Fritz Kramer helped him write. They acknowledge he wrote the history of the Battle of the Bulge. And in his own history, I've cited over 710 pages before, where his name is only in there one time. So I looked up again, where was this Fritz Kramer this one time, where he's writing about himself? Because the other Kramer was, according to the American Army, was in the 84th Division. And what I found is that the Waffen-SS Kramer, who was telephonically in touch with Adolf Hitler until the moment he embraced the American Army, and these volumes give you the page numbers of the fact that Hitler was in touch with him, they were in a town called Mannheim, which is referred to as the Crossroads, and now I see why the book Crossroads of Death is the merger of the Waffen-SS with the American Army, because this is where they merged the 84th Infantry Division that the German Fritz Kramer that was in American uniform was supposed to be in, merged with Hitler's Waffen-SS Kramer in the town of Mannheim and on the Ain River, A-I-S-N-E, and also at Erzi in Germany. Now, in the time period from December 20th to 24th, is when these battles merged together, when they came together. There was that four-day period. But by January 1945, the Americans had taken those Waffen-SS, those choice people, as prisoners. And, of course, William Casey could use them. In the report of the meeting and the merging of these people, on page 577, this is a 700-page history of World War II, just the Ardennes Offensive, it said that the 84th Infantry Division, and this is the Army papers that I got from the American Monocle German Fritz Kramer, 84th Division set out patrols and counted its prisoners. There were 592 for the Verdun engagement. By January the 1st, 1945, New Year's Day, the 84th had this 592 choice prisoners that later many of them could be identified for working for the United States government. And the Army account tells about the 84th Division working in the same cities as the account of the Nazis in other books, meeting on the Liège Highway and in the town of Mannheim. And also on page 580 of the American official report of the war, it says the SS Panzer Corps and the 6th Panzer Division, run by Fritz Kramer, linked with the Americans at the crossroad. Hitler himself would be giving the orders telephonically. That's page 580. And 576 said the 6th Panzer Division of Kramer crossed the Meuse River near Liège with Sepp Dietrich. Adolf Hitler was personally directing the battle. December 24th, 1944, that's page 578 and 591, with Mr. von Rundstedt and Model, the famous Model. Now, this Kramer, who was so important to Adolf Hitler, could and has and was taken a prisoner, because we have seen him in the docket at Dachau, prisoner number 33. But the first thing Senator Joe McCarthy did when he went in the United States Senate and he wasn't assigned to this operation at all, this wasn't part of his Senate duties, was to make sure that all those prisoners taken at Malmedy were released promptly, and they were released. Some had a 10-year sentence, some had a life sentence, but they were, in fact, released. I'll be doing more on this later, but and trying to untangle maybe for you some of the confusing points. But the point is that seeing the role that Casey had with these top prisoners of war and how easily he could put them in the Gestapo in Berlin and call them OSS, and Otto von Bolschering, the president of that Transcomputer International that became Stanford Technology Trading Group, was in the Waffen-SS till just before the war was over, and he was put in the OSS. So it turns out that William Casey was, in fact, responsible for those people in Berlin and had been working on it since 1943 and was ready to move with them when the war was over. Well, this concludes the first part of World Watchers. Before I finish, I want to say that the views expressed on this program, again, are those of myself and not necessarily reflecting the views of Kazoo staff or board of directors. We want to thank Coast Components at 684-1185 for the Monterey Bay Area's distributor of electronic components. Thank you for the underwriting grant that helps bring you this past hour of World Watchers, and again, the previous hour of World Watchers was made possible in part by Lowdown, a leading manufacturer of microcomputer peripherals located in Scotts Valley. For more information, call 438-7400. This is Mae Brussel. It is KAZU, Radio with a Choice, and you hang in there. This next hour is yours. It's your turn to call and tell me what you're reading or hearing. There is just so much news. Share your ideas and thoughts.